The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my friend John Couch. John's on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. It's Friday, November 22nd, 2019. This is a very sad day in American history, of course. 56 years ago, the assassination of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. You know, I'm of that age. I just remember this like it happened yesterday. Just a young kid in high school by the high school radio station, and the UPI going crazy and seeing that flash out of Dallas. It's just, well, it's one of those things. You just never forget it if you're of a certain age. A very sad time. We are live weekdays during the noon hour on 1030 Tucson's Voice for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening, and all of our podcasts available at buckmastershow.com. We get such good feedback from people who can hear this program anywhere in the world, and the podcast, we make sure they're available usually a couple of hours by the conclusion of the program. We've got them up on the website. Our media partners, we like to do our Friday shout out, TucsonSentinel.com, our friend Dylan Smith running the show over there, Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. Dan Shear and his team do a great job for WIC Communications, Tucson Local Media Group and its portfolio of publications, Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. All of those media partners prominently display the Buckmaster Show logo and a link to my website. I appreciate it very much. Friday Focus interview today, Tucson Police Chief Chris Magnus is with us. Chief, how are you, sir?
Well, I'm doing all right. If I sound a little hoarse, I regret not getting that flu shot earlier this year. I'm just getting over that.
Really? So you came down with something learned recently or what?
Yeah, I did. And it was the real thing. And wow. So you always think, going to get that flu shot.
It started early this year.
I wish I'd done that earlier this year, but I'm doing much better. Thank you.
Joining me in studio in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio, Joe Ferguson has dropped by, and we always welcome Joe, political writer for the Arizona Daily Star. Joe, how has your week been?
It's been busy. Glad to be here.
But always good to see you. We had another unfortunate incident, Chief, as you know, this morning involving a pedestrian, and the word is that the pedestrian is going to survive, but they were life-threatening injuries. The narrative, Chief, is that we're seeing an epidemic of these pedestrian accidents. What do the statistics show?
The numbers show that it's pretty bad. I mean, there's no way to put a good face on this. We have a real problem in our community. We're not unique. Actually, a lot of other Arizona cities are struggling with this too. Probably a similar combination of things, but particularly in Tucson, where we have a lot of arterials, where with many lanes, where traffic is moving at speeds that are often too high. People are not really looking out for each other either in terms of as fellow motorists or towards pedestrians and bicyclists. And to some degree, that goes both ways. We've got a number of individuals who are out on the roadways as pedestrians or riding a bike, who are often not in clothing that makes it possible to see them, no reflectors, often crossing in places where it's very unexpected. And now, of course, with darkness earlier and longer, that compounds the problems. So it's not markedly different than what we've seen over the past 2 years, but even the past 2 years are way too high. And it is it's really totally unacceptable.
So the spike is up.
It is up.
Yeah.
And I'm talking to chiefs in other cities who are struggling with many of these exact same kinds of issues. But I think it is compounded here because in a lot of other places where people would be making crosstown journeys on the freeway, here they're doing it on arterials. They're in a hurry to either get to work or to get home. Mm-hmm. They're also multitasking in many cases where on the phone or doing other things. And it's super challenging. And it's frustrating to us as much as anyone else.
Joe?
Do we learn a little bit about, since the texting and driving ban has started, whether or not that's played a role in this in terms of people who have been involved in accidents that were on the phone?
I think we certainly see that there are a number of crashes where people are still on the phone. And a lot of people, interestingly, are somehow under the impression that if they're just holding the phone as opposed to having it up to their ear, they're okay, which is not right. Any handheld device, you know, it's unacceptable and it's breaking the law. But it really isn't. I wish we could get people to think about this in terms other, even differently from breaking the law or not. It is simply when you're going at speeds of any significance, you have little to no reaction time if you're looking down or trying to do something with a phone in your hand. And things happen so quickly. And people say, well, it's not fair. I was driving close to the speed limit, or this person came out of nowhere. I didn't expect that, this to happen. And I get it. We never expect the things. And that's part of the challenge is, as a driver, you have to be ready to deal with what's totally unexpected. People crossing in the wrong places, people who are dark that you don't, in dark clothing that you don't see. And of course, there are equal challenges when it comes to the conduct of motorists as well as pedestrians and bicyclists, but we've got a real issue.
David called us at 790-2040, and he has a comment about road accidents. Go ahead, David.
Well, as I see it, the way this town is growing, spreading out, the D was a pygmy about 12 years ago to allow development to really explode way out in the Tortolito foothills. It's 20, 25 miles from the urban core. And as a result, they've had to build these arterial roads to service it. And when we have these large arterial roads for people having to drive greater distances because the development is spreading out.
Yeah, I think the chief did mention your concern about the arterial roads.
Right.
And we are the largest city in the United States without a freeway. Because basically where if you count the interstate, isn't really a designated freeway. So people come here, especially different this time of year, very popular. They're not really used to so many arterial streets.
Yes, that's right. And I think our response to that has to be multifaceted. We're really trying to use data, timely data. We have an analysis section in the police department that provides our officers with really up-to-date information about where clusters of accidents are happening, where we're seeing bigger problems with speed or other bad behavior, where we're seeing more pedestrians crossing in areas that they shouldn't. And then we're working hard to give those areas more attention. But, when it's all said and done, I still, the philosophy of us all looking out for each other, I think is so important, because this can affect any of us and it changes your entire life in a second. And I think this idea of being willing to just slow it down a little bit, to
right.
be as alert as possible, to not get caught up doing other things when you really should be putting your focus on driving. And then if you are out as a pedestrian, I know it's hard sometimes. There's greater distance than we'd like between crossings mm-hmm. and between hawk lights and everything else. We know that's not perfect, and there's a lot of work being done by our partners at DDOT and beyond to address that. But these shortcuts are what lead to a lot of these injuries and deaths, and it's just not worth it.
How has e-scooters played into this kind of issue?
Yeah, I don't think we know enough yet. We're a couple months into this, and So far, most of the e-scooter use has been limited to the downtown area. By and large, the complaints that we get associated with them are the way they're just sort of dumped or left on sidewalks, blocking the path for others, making it hard for people who are disabled or whatever. I'm sure we are doing our best to collect data related to injuries or if they're a contributing source of traffic and other kinds of crashes. But right now, I just don't think we have enough data to make a really informed judgment on this yet.
And of course, the council is using this as it's an experiment. This is the e-scooter program.
Right. I think they have it as a pilot program.
Yeah, it's a pilot program.
And I know they're going to be doing some initial discussion about how things are going so far. But I think a couple months into it, it's really hard to get a good read on, you know, whether this is a net positive or a negative.
All right. Lauren has called us at 790-2040. He has a question for the Tucson Police Chief, Chris Magnus. Go ahead, Lauren.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. My topic relates to the speed and speed limits. Now, it occurred to me that I wasn't paying that much attention, but earlier on the same station this morning, I think, I heard the host suggest maybe we could increase speeds on Broadway or 22nd up to 50 miles an hour to improve traffic flow. And I thought, well, that's pretty counterintuitive to me. I would like to improve traffic flow with timing of lights. And I'm sure city engineers are doing everything they possibly can to synchronize lights. I know that when I come home from work, which is like 1:30 in the morning, I'm almost positive I can flash my brights and the lights change.
Huh.
The synchronization at night at 2 a.m. is completely different than the daytime, but I'm getting off topic.
Okay.
I would like to see speed limits lowered. I was one of those weirdos that when Reagan imposed 55-mile-an-hour limits on our interstates, I was one of the people that agreed.
All right, Lauren, thank you. Let's hear what the chief has to say.
Lauren, I'm with you at least on the arterial local streets as far as I think raising speeds is a horrible idea. And I think the better approach, and I believe most of the folks who are making these decisions at TDOT would agree that it makes more sense to do more to synchronize lights and to address it from that standpoint. But higher speeds, I think, is just a disaster. We see, again, even back to the issue of diverted attention or something happens suddenly, the difference between the injuries and the likelihood of death just based on 5 miles an hour faster is significant. So, you know, I'm in favor of protected left turns, slower speeds, and better synchronization of lights. And I think that's really, I hope that's the direction we're going as a community.
And we've addressed that with Councilman Kasacek recently here on the program. You do need to lower this, in order to do that, the council cannot just do it. I guess it has to be done at the state level in many cases.
Well, I think it depends on the road. We have a fair amount of control over a great number of the roads in our community. They're not state controlled. And so, you know, TDOT has a lot of say over what they're going to do. I really appreciate the fact that their new director, Diane Alicorn, you know, is working closely with the police department. I have a captain, Diana Duffy, who I've assigned to do just traffic safety related work. She's working really closely with their staff. We're piloting a number of projects. We're looking to do a lot of public education on things. We're trying pretty much everything we can. But as I always say, I mean, just no simple solutions to this.
All right, we're going to take our break right here. When we come back with Chief Magnus, there is a perception in this town that the community is crime-ridden. We're going to find out what the latest statistics show about that, and it's counter in many cases to lots of perceptions about crime in Tucson. But right now, Chief and Joe, I want to talk about my favorite bakery in town. That's Mona's Danish Bakery. And as you can imagine, Chief, they're getting very busy because Thanksgiving— is next week. And the pies that are available, Chief Baker and owner Steve has given me the list. So let's see what the chief says about the list of pies. Okay, let's hear your... We've got pumpkin, apple, blueberry, cherry, and pecan. Which would you prefer, Chief?
I got to admit, I am somewhat of a traditionalist in this area, and there's nothing like a good pumpkin pie, but for me, cherry comes in a close second. I know. What are you saying, Joe? What are you saying?
Heresy.
Oh. What do you got, Joe?
Oh, come on. There's nothing more true and American than a good apple baked pie, so.
Mm. Wow. The pecan sounds really good to me. And of course, Mona's Danish Bakery is home of the Danish Kringle, so you might want to have the Danish Kringle for your Thanksgiving morning. And they're coming in traditional custard, cherry, strawberry, blueberry, lemon, apricot, and pecan. Which one on that one for you, Chief?
Oh, God, they all sound really, really good.
Are you a blueberry guy?
I like blueberries, so the custard, though.
Oh, that's to die for.
Okay.
Joe, what do you say, apricot?
I think you have to go back a couple times to figure out which one's the best. So
yeah,
anyway, try them all,
choice.
Right?
There you go.
Not an easy choice.
Mona's Danish Bakery, their number 579-1959. Put in your order for your pies, your Danish Kringle, and of course, what about the rolls for your Thanksgiving table? Northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, open right now for lunch, but do put in the order. Today would be a good day to put in for so you can pick up the order Wednesday before the big day on Thanksgiving. We'll be right back. It's Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Take 5 minutes to give us your input on regional transportation matters. The Regional Transportation Authority's 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee prepared draft guiding principles to consider as they prepare to develop the next RTA plan. The survey is available between mid-November and mid-December. To take the survey or to sign up to receive RTA notices, please visit www.rtamobility.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock-full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Moe has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Moe for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our Friday Focus interview today. Chris Magnus is with us, the police chief in Tucson, Arizona. Joe Ferguson is here from the Arizona Daily Star. I had Joe taking part in our conversation. Now, as promised, Chief, as you know, there is a perception among some in town that this is just a crime-ridden community, crimes out of control. What do the latest statistics show? What are the facts here?
Yeah, we do a lot of work to really track this data better now. We have, as I said, an entire crime analysis unit that really stays on top of this right up to the day, literally, to see how we're doing, to compare not only month to month, but to the same time the prior year, so we can get a sense of what kind of progress we're making. And the numbers are encouraging. We have done a ton of work. I'm so impressed with what's happening out in our various divisions where the commanders are and their team are really working closely with community, with neighborhood groups to bring down property crime. They're doing a lot of things around prevention. They're doing a lot of focused enforcement. And so, for example, even compared to last year when we were seeing some decreases, the property crime numbers are all down in the low to mid 20% range. So, for example, burglary is down 22% compared to the prior year. It's larceny down 23%, grand theft auto down 16%. And then as we start looking at, you know, robbery, which is, of course, more of a violent crime, but down almost 10%. And homicides down 16%. So we're not saying we've solved the crime problem. There's plenty of work to be done, but we are making progress. And what people also don't always hear about is many of the crimes that make, you know, the papers and appropriate, we get it, appropriately so. Community needs to know. They see this on TV. But what they don't always see is that many of those crimes are solved. And it's really exciting to see people being brought to justice, especially on some of the burglaries and other property crimes where often individual who we catch for one of those crimes, we can link to many, many, many more of those crimes. So a lot of really good work being done.
Here's Joe Ferguson.
Well, I'll just share with you that my house got robbed. And while it took 9 hours for TPD to respond, I was really ambivalent on the idea that they were swabbing the surfaces and that they were taking stuff to have it DNA tested. And a year later, you guys caught the person.
Mm. Yeah. No, we do. You know, here's the thing. On what we call cold burglaries, meaning the suspect has left the scene, it is not a crime in progress. We are, just based on the reality of our staffing level, not able to get to a lot of those calls as quickly as we would like to. Happily, 9 hours is a lot longer than what is typically the case, but no, it's fair to say that their response time can be several hours for cold property crimes. And what we're doing is we use a combination of our community service officers, our crime scene investigators, and in some cases, when available, when they're not on, emergencies that are going down right at that time, police officers, our goal really is to do a good job processing those scenes. We enter that information into a system where things are matched up and databases can be compared against each other. And as I said, people are often surprised at the number of these cases that we're able to solve. So I think that's encouraging because, frankly, there are a lot of cities our size and certainly bigger that they've really just given up on even trying to investigate property crimes. And we're not willing to do that, especially when it comes to somebody's home being broken into. That's really a violation of the most basic level of trust.
Domestic violence is an area that's going against the grain as far as the up curve.
Domestic violence. See, but here's what I'd say about that. When people say the numbers are up, mm-hmm. I'm not sure. I mean, obviously, any level of domestic violence is unacceptable, but we've also worked really hard in this community to create a climate in which people are willing to report DV and where they believe that there is going to be a police response, something is going to be done, there is going to be meaningful follow-up. I think that sometimes I'm more concerned when I see very low numbers of reported domestic violence, because that tells me that either people
are
have
afraid,
no confidence
perhaps, to come forward.
Or
yeah.
that they're
yeah.
afraid to come
yeah.
forward, especially in a community
sure.
like ours where we have a lot of immigrants and, mm-hmm. and in a large undocumented population. There are some cities where that population doesn't call at all for things like domestic violence and sexual assault. And here, we've worked hard to build a relationship where people understand that our goal is to investigate those crimes and to take them seriously. We have Spanish-speaking officers. We have resources. We're doing a lot of things to work with that population. So, you know, I'm never quite sure. I don't like that numbers are higher with domestic violence, but I also know we're working really closely with our partners to address that.
Greg has called us with a question. He called at 790-2040. He has a question for Chief Magnus about staffing issues. Go ahead, Greg.
Well, actually, Bill, and I just have a minute, but I wanted to honor an officer who went from GPD up to Mesa to become chief up there. I think, was his name Batista, chief?
Ramon Batista, yes. He was one of our assistant chiefs here, and he took the chief's job in Mesa, but
and
left recently.
He decided to resign, and I got to tell you, Bill, because I know I got 30 seconds, the reason he resigned is the rank and file didn't want him in there. And you know why they didn't want him in there? He released footage that showed maybe officers that were excessive with force, and a guy like that, as a citizen, I mean, I got to honor the guy for the courage, but in a way, it cost him his job.
All right. What about complaints about officers using excessive force, Chief Magnus?
Well, we've worked really hard in our agency to, first of all, create a culture of accountability where people understand that if excessive force or if they use excessive force, if they engage in other kinds of misconduct, we're going to do thorough, credible, transparent investigations, and people are going to be held responsible for that. And I think as a result of that, we have really, we have a rank and file who overwhelmingly are committed to do their jobs professionally, who really care about their reputation as public servants and who understand that accountability is part of the name of the game here in Tucson. Now, there are certainly other departments where perhaps this is a new thing, where the idea is we minimize, we try not to be forthright with the public, where people are not really held accountable in credible ways. I think that's really unfortunate, and it shows that as a profession, we still have a long ways to go. But I got to say, I'm very impressed with how things work here. We have an Office of Professional Standards that makes themselves very available to take complaints. We utilize body camera footage. Often that footage shows that it's not quite sometimes the way that somebody might represent a problem when they make a complaint. But look, our goal is to be fair. And we work hard to have a good organizational culture and climate of accountability.
Chief Magnus is with us. It's the Buckmaster Show, the Friday Focus interview. And Joe Ferguson is here from the Arizona Daily Star. I have a story in front of me, Joe, that you wrote about the city budget when it was first being put together about 6 months ago. And as I see in your story, Joe, it looked like 20 new police officers were part of the budget. So is that about right?
That's what they've budgeted for. So hopefully through the academy and other things, you can really get that 20 on top of current staffing numbers. I know that the chief's going to tell us that's probably a challenge sometimes.
Oh, Joe. yeah, it's really a challenge. I mean, here's the thing. We lose, give or take, 100 officers a year as a function of attrition. And it's just, that's really for the most part, normal attrition. People retire, they go out on a medical disability, there's one thing or another. So we have to, it's not just hiring 20 new officers a year, really it's closer to hiring 120. And just to get that 100 to keep up with attrition is no small challenge. So we're working extremely hard to find creative ways to reach out to interested candidates. In fact, if I could just mention, one of the things that we're just starting to deploy is a text process where you text in 474747 and then just write the words join TPD, be caps, small letters, doesn't matter. So again, 474747, put join TPD. You will get a message back almost immediately about our recruiting process. And then a recruiter will actually reach out to you and let you know how, you know, say, let's talk, let's let us get some information to you. You know, because this is the world we're in now. Young people who are looking to get into this profession, they're not willing to just show up at job fairs anymore. They're surfing the internet. They want to be able to find out as much as they can online. They want to be able to talk to someone right away, and then they want a process that moves along as quickly as possible. And we're in a really competitive world where if I can't come up with a process that's fast enough with you know, and that gets people interested in my department, there are plenty of other agencies all around that that are right there ready to do it. So,
but we're competitive at least now?
We are competitive. We are competitive. We can always do better, of course, but our pay has certainly improved greatly after the work of the council. A little over a year ago, we're still not anywhere close to where we need to be. Our staffing numbers are better, but they're still, I mean, as recently as yesterday, we have 795 deployable police officers and then another 44 who are not deployable, basically because they're like might be on a medical leave or something like that. And then close to 60 that we call in the training pipeline, like they're in the academy. So all that brings you up to just shy of 900 officers, but again, only 795 are actually deployable. And that's, we need to, that buffer, we really need to get another 100, 150 to be in a more, in a better position for faster response times to calls, to be able to do more of the things we'd like to do. So we're hiring, and we encourage people to reach out to us. Again, the text number is 474747, and just text in join TPD. We'll get you information.
You know, on the campaign trail, this officer was a real concern by some of the Republicans running, and they wanted to see the number come back to its historic level of approximately 1,200. I calculated that that per year cost was $20 million a year to the city of Tucson, and I assume my numbers were probably on the low side.
I think they're on the low side. Plus, just to be real, I mean, I hear this historical number thrown around anywhere between, you know, we used to have an average of 1,000, 1,100, 1,200, 1,300. I mean, depending on the historian that you speak with, the numbers are all over the map. But to me, that's not all that relevant. I mean, what's relevant is here's where we are now. Here's what we can afford. How do we use all those officers as effectively as possible? How do we keep them on board in the department? How do we look at alternatives to a police officer response for certain kinds of calls? How do we better engage the community in keeping itself safe? This is the direction we need to go to. I think a more realistic number to try to get to, and this in and of itself is really tough, is somewhere in the mid-900s. That's just reality with where we're at.
Can you offer a young officer or any officer coming on board, at least they're going to be in a state-of-the-art vehicle with the equipment they need?
Yeah, the great news is, especially after Prop 101, we've finally been able to upgrade our fleet. We have very good equipment. I think we provide some of the best training, frankly, that's available in the country.
How long officers, is that process, by the way, the training process?
Well, we have an academy that we send people to. It's several months. And then, you know, we have an ongoing, once you graduate from the academy, you go through what's called a field training officer program, which is a couple of more months of actually being out on the street with a training officer. So from the time you're hired to the time you can work by yourself, it's really pretty close to a year. But you're going to get some of the best training you can get anywhere in this country. We're really doing a lot of creative, interesting things. And then people are going to get the chance to do more kinds of police work, more kinds of community engagement than they would in many, many other environments. So this is the place to be if you really want to make a difference and if you really care about your community.
Joe, anything else with you?
You know, I just wanted to talk a little bit about a story coming out of Phoenix where they did some analysis of police officers in Phoenix. And they found that they had pulled their weapons or drew their weapons 450 times in a single month. Does TPD monitor that same kind of information?
We do monitor how often officers pull their weapon. But even there, just to be clear, unholstering your weapon because you're going into a dangerous situation, even that is different than necessarily pointing your weapon. And certainly discharging
different degrees
it,
then of-
right, discharging it is very rare indeed. Plus, we have a number of other use of force options ranging from the taser. We have, pepper ball, pepper spray, a whole range of things that we train people. Most importantly, you know, the number one way that we handle problems and de-escalate situations is through communication. How we talk to people, officers get more training than ever before about how to de-escalate situations. A lot of our calls, the great majority, involve dealing with people who are in some kind of emotional crisis, who may be on some kind of drug, who are having real problems. And so we put a lot of time and effort into giving
verbal
our folks the best training
huge.
on verbal communication, yeah. De-escalation skills, creating time and distance so you have more options. I really think this is the way to go, because officers, they don't want to have to use deadly force. That's the last thing police officers want to do. Incredibly traumatic to go through. They want different and better outcomes. And so our officers are the biggest fans of these alternatives that give them more options.
All right, I'm out of time. Everything on my agenda we covered, except I didn't get to, and maybe we can give it a quick 1 minute or so, the 911 system with kind of a merger with the fire department and the police department.
Yeah, just in a nutshell, we have a brand new public safety communications director. Her name is Jamie O'Leary. She's from Oklahoma City. Terrific woman with a lot of experience. I think she's exactly who we need to help really complete our transition into making this a really top-notch 911 system. Still some work to be done there. They have staffing problems as well, but they're moving in the right direction, and I think she's going to provide terrific leadership to help us get there.
And we'll look forward to having her on the program. I've got all sorts of questions for her, because let's face it, Chief, so many people rely on 911 here, and sometimes maybe not for the right reasons.
Right, exactly.
But they want some kind of medical care, or perhaps they don't have a doctor, so they call 911. That's not really what the system was designed for. So,
exactly.
Anyway, Chief, thank you very much. I hope you and yours have a great Thanksgiving, and you'll be doing the turkey, and we'll see how it all turns out, right?
Exactly. Not too many
not
pieces
too much
of that pie,
now.
Right?
Let's, there you go. And then after the show here, you and your team can head up to Mona's for the Danish Kringle for the next police.
Yeah, thanks for putting
staff,
that idea in our head. Now that's trouble.
It's coming. All right, we'll take our break here. It's Buckmaster in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. Then Joe and I, Joe Ferguson, will chat for a few minutes. Then Weekend Watch with Matt Russell will continue on Friday on Buckmaster. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice, your source for trusted news talk in Southern Arizona. We're in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio. Joe Ferguson is with me in studio. We have an abbreviated kind of roundtable portion of our program today, and that's by design, Joe, because as you know, I had quite an agenda for the chief, and I think we covered a lot of ground.
You really did.
So that's why we've got a little less time with you today. Your political notebook, Residents Recall, has begun, I guess, in Oral Valley. Is this one for just the mayor, or are there more people involved?
Well, I think it's going to probably branch out past the mayor. I think Oral Valley is just one of those places that, you know, there is a deep division among people about what to do about those golf courses. For some, it's their lifeblood. For some of them, they see it as an unneeded extravagance.
It's kind of like this centerpiece issue, isn't it?
I can't seem to find something that's more in touch with what's going on up there. I know that every time I've covered up there, it's all led back to golf in one way or another.
And can you give us kind of a bottom line what these folks are upset about?
I think that they, you know, some people want the city to get out of the golf game. It's costing a lot of money. There's a lot of concerns about underwriting some golf courses that are old and need of significant investment just to get them up to the standards. And I think they would like to see the city abandon those properties, turn them into parks, turn them into, you know, just kind of green areas. It's something where you don't need to necessarily rework the entire plumbing to make it a viable
So here we go. Petition, they'll have to collect, the folks that want, that are pushing this, they'll have to collect roughly almost 4,000 signatures to recall the mayor and 3,600 to recall the vice mayor. So we'll see how that goes. And they have until February 19th to get those turned in. So
yeah, I mean, it's citywide. So, you know, as long as you park in front of a library or a post office, those are, you know, numbers you can do. So we'll see what happens in February.
Some of these county races are starting to shape up. Barbara LaWall, who has been the Pima County attorney for the last 24 years, announced earlier this year that she will not be seeking re-election. There's someone in her office, correct, Joe Ferguson, who would like to pick up the
one of her deputies, Mr. Mosier, is going to be, has already announced that he is running. He's a Democrat. He's been in the office for more than a decade. And so he was the first to announce, but not the last to announce. So now we have somebody running against him.
We have an individual who's an attorney in town that announced this week, Laura Conover. So you kind of have like the old guard versus the new in that race.
Yeah, I think that you're going to see a certain matchup. And Ms. Conover, in her first initial public statement, really kind of rolled out that she wants to make some deep changes into how the county is running their program, specifically targeting the prosecution of felony drug possession, which doesn't take a lot to mount up to a felony at the end of the day.
We had Mayor Rothschild on the program this week, kind of his goodbye tour, his exit interview, but it will not be
a great interview.
Well, thank you very much. Won't be the last that we will see of the mayor. He's going to be teaching a course over at the law college. The item that I really wanted to highlight from that interview, Joe, was the fact that during his 8 years, how much change has happened at a cabinet level with the city manager, who now I believe is the second longest city manager in Tucson history, and all the changes. Chief Magnus came under that during that 8 year period. Now we just recently had a new fire chief. We have a new parks person, transportation, on and on it goes. That's changed the whole tone at City Hall.
And I think that once you have the right manager, that's how, when you start seeing these kind of personnel changes, people come in, people come out. Mr. Ortega's leadership skill is well known, and you know, people either agree with him or disagree with him, and that's why we've seen so many changes over the last couple of years with a lot of new blood in economic development, as well as some other departments that we haven't even mentioned.
When will the official swearing in be for our new Madam Mayor?
Depends who you ask. She's already been sworn in once.
What?
Yeah. So what? State law requires to be sworn in within 5 days of the election certification. So she was sworn in already once, but there will be a very public swearing in ceremony over at the Leo Rich Theater on December 2nd in the morning. And then she will have her first real council meeting where they start taking action the next day on a Tuesday.
What's coming up in the paper this weekend?
So I've worked on a little bit more about Mayor Romero's new plans on where she's going to be swearing in, a Democratic fundraiser that's going to be done in her honor, and some of that, as well as talk a little bit about a fight over parking next to the Botanical Gardens.
Well, as Mayor Rothschild pointed out, we may have a new mayor, but still have the same core issues to worry about.
Yes, we do.
People call, they want a police officer to come. Those kind of core issues are not going to change. All right. Joe Ferguson, thank you very much. We'll look for your work in the Arizona Daily Star. Have a great Thanksgiving, Joe. Appreciate it.
Do the same. Thanks.
Thanks a lot. Buckmaster continues in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio. Matt Russell coming up with Weekend Watch right after this.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
A Citizens Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is preparing to develop the next RTA plan. That's why members want your input on a survey of draft guiding principles they prepared. The principles will help guide them as they develop the next 20-year plan, which would be funded by a voter-required extension of the RTA's half-cent excise or sales tax. To take the survey or sign up to receive RTA notices, please visit www.rtamobility.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
Ever dream of taking a river cruise? Bon Voyage Travel introduces you to Ama Waterways. You'll explore authentic culture in captivating landscapes in luxury and comfort. All on board an award-winning fleet while you travel through incredible cities and villages in Europe, Southeast Asia, and Africa. Picture yourself on the river, indulging in Ama Waterways' locally inspired cuisine paired with complimentary wine with every lunch and dinner. Contact Bon Voyage Travel today to customize your river cruise vacation.
At Sierra Tucson, we see miracles of healing every day. We are honored to be an international premier treatment center right here in Southern Arizona. Our comprehensive evidence-based programs focus on addiction recovery, mood and anxiety disorders, trauma recovery, including PTSD, pain recovery, and co-occurring disorders. Learn more at sierratucson.com or call us at 800-842-4487. We work with most insurance payers.
Weekend Watch with Matt Russell, presented by our friends in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, which is just about a three-hour drive from Tucson and to a great part of the Land of Enchantment, the southwest corner, southwestnewmexico.org, the great starting place to find out where to stay. And there's some really nice accommodations and what to do. So many great recreation opportunities, including Gila National Wilderness. So much to do there, hiking, all sorts of outdoor recreation. Again, southwestnewmexico.org. Let's welcome now Matt Russell, longtime host of Weekend Watch, award-winning Tucson publicist, Inside Tucson Business, food and beverage columnist. Hello, Matt.
Hey, Bill, how are you?
Doing very well. Matt, is there a way to prepare my palate for Thanksgiving? Is there some kind of something that might get those taste buds working overtime?
Perfect timing, Bill Buckmaster. You know, most of us have our Thanksgiving menus put together weeks, if not months in advance, especially if you're a turkey traditionalist like I am. But sometimes the wines are a last-minute scramble, and you can't let this happen to you again this year. I say your best bet is to head downtown to Maynard's today at 6 o'clock for an Arizona wine tasting. Now, their house sommelier is going to lead you through a tasting of five of his favorite local wines with an eye on those that have great potential for your Thanksgiving table. The tasting is only $12, and, of course, all the bottles are going to be for sale to take home for uncorking next Thursday. That is, if you can wait that long.
Hey, Matt, I heard something about a new cocktail menu at the AC Hotel.
So much fun. You know, we all remember learning in school the five C's of the Arizona economy. Remember?
Cattle, sure. Yep.
Citrus.
Uh-huh.
Cotton. Yep. Climate and copper, right? You remember?
Yeah, I do remember. Uh-huh.
The mixology team at the AC Hotel Tucson has just launched a new cocktail menu that features libations corresponding with each of those C's. I think that's so creative. In fact, they've added two more C's to the list, culture and college, rounding out their list of the now seven C's of the Arizona economy. This weekend is the perfect time to taste your way through these seven C's. I'm curious how the concept of college is represented in a cocktail. I'm almost afraid to ask.
Any recommendations for all the out-of-towners who are in town for the L Tour that would like to do a brunch?
Absolutely, and it's another new restaurant opening. This time, it's for those, as you say, who want to change up their brunch game. It's the Sonoran Brunch Company, located in the old Poco and Mom's space on Cold near 22nd Street. The menu looks like a modern Arizona twist on traditional brunch fare. What stands out for me, Bill? I'll be digging into the chorizo skillet pie, the wings and waffles with hot honey, and a poblano patty melt on thick cut rye. It's the Sonoran Brunch Company. It is open this weekend.
Yeah, that sounds like a great menu. And in the column, Inside Tucson Business.
Yes, a local Foothills restaurant. They just launched their new fall menu, And with so many Mediterranean-inspired dishes there, you'd swear the chef was stalking me on my recent travel to Italy and Greece. The story is in this week's Inside Tucson Business.
Happy Thanksgiving, Matt. Thanks so much for your service to our program. We appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
To you and yours.
Thanks. All right. Matt Russell, Weekend Watch. The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Original theme music composed by Christophon. There's a link to Christophon on our website, buckmastershow.com. My thanks to my assistant, Rosemary Brandt, making sure our podcasts get posted in a very timely manner. Everyone here at KVOI, including my engineer and producer, John Couch, the entire team at Bustos Media Tucson, all of us wish you a safe, pleasant weekend and a great start to the Thanksgiving weekend. Have a good one. Back with you Monday.